The universes look like they're going to bounce off his head and just be lost. That would have been a problem. But they were trying to restrain him, but they couldn't restrain him. He was just so overwhelmed in ecstasy. But fortunately, the universes didn't get lost. Anyway, then the next chapter is about the prayers of Madhai. The prayers of Madhai. Madhai, Jagai and Madhai, they got love of God and everything was forgiven, but, and they were simply chanting and dancing in ecstasy and going everywhere with Lord Chaitanya. But they would, from time to time, they would remember that, wow, what we did, what we did. And particularly Madhai, who was the actual one who attacked Lord Nityananda, he would remember what I did, and it would become too much. And he would just collapse, just crying and lamenting. And it came to such a point that he was constantly in this state, just constantly crying and lamenting, that I attacked Lord Nityananda. What sort of demon am I? So then one day he met Lord Nityananda and he appealed to him for forgiveness. He'd already done that, but, you know, again, like, more deeply. So there are some prayers there, Madhai's prayers, and I thought I could just read them. There is a benediction. Let me just see. Oh yeah, okay. Lord Nityananda says, now this is just to encourage you to stay awake. Is anyone asleep? If you're asleep, yes? Put your hand up if you're asleep. So this is to encourage you to stay awake. He says, Lord Nityananda says, that anyone who hears your wonderful and devotional prayers to me will certainly develop loving attachment to my lotus feet. Okay, that is the benediction from Lord Nityananda. And it's, in other words, it's true. So if you hear nicely Madhai's prayers, then according to Lord Nityananda, you'll develop loving attachment to his lotus feet. Is that okay? Is that all right? Good. So let's listen then. Madhai's prayers. It's not so long, we'll just take 2 or 3 minutes. O Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is resting on your chest. Your body is very soft and gives Krishna great pleasure when you expand yourself as his bed, as Anantashesh, and he lies on you. But I am so monstrous and sinful that I hurt the same transcendental body of yours. Who is more wretched than I am? Your transcendental form is constantly worshipped by Lord Shiva, accompanied by his beautiful consort Parvati and other young maidens. Simply by remembering your form, one is freed from all bondage. And the same spiritual body was bleeding due to my misdeeds. Chitraketu, the famous emperor, was living happily by worshipping you and was counted amongst the foremost Vaishnav devotees. That same form that is worshipped by the entire universe was brutally hit by me, the lowest of sinners. The sages of Naimisharanya forest, headed by Shonaka, became freed from all material entanglement by meditating upon your form. In your expansion as Lakshman, you were wounded by Indrajit, the son of Ravan, and for this you killed him. Similarly, the gorilla demon Dwivida also met a premature death at your hands because he was harassing you. The mighty Jarasandha was also vanquished by you for being inimical to you. I'm so foolish that I did not understand what is beneficial for me, and so I inflicted pain upon your transcendental form. I do not know then the consequences for such an act. When Rukmi, Krishna's brother-in-law, simply insulted you, you took his life. Romaharshana Suta was blessed with a long life by the sages of Naimasharanya. But when he failed to give you proper respect, you slew him. So what do I deserve? King Duryodhana and his entire dynasty was almost exterminated just for disobeying your words. They were spared by good fortune because of the presence of elevated devotees like Kunti, Bhishma, Yudhisthira and Arjuna. When one's very life is at stake, just by a little disrespectful attitude towards you, like Romaharshana Suta, he just wouldn't stand up. That's all. That's all he did. He just wouldn't stand up when Lord Balaram entered the assembly. And Rukmi, he just insulted Lord Balaram. What sort of kshatriya are you? You should be out there herding your cows. That's more suitable for you. So just some silly little insult. And they lost their lives. So when one's very life is at stake, just by a little disrespectful attitude towards you, then to what depths of depravity and hellishness must I enter for my heinous act? Speaking like this, Madhai fell to the ground, clutching the Lord's lotus feet to his heart. Madhai continued to pray, "The shelter of these lotus feet can save anyone from the endless cycle of rebirth. You have appeared simply to deliver the most fallen. So my dear Lord, kindly protect this fallen soul surrendered to you, for you are my life and soul and most treasured goal." Jewel of all the Vaishnava devotees. You're completely free from anger, always submerged in the highest state of blissfulness. You're always inclined to forgive those who have surrendered to you. I am the most atrocious beast and offender, so kindly forgive me, Lord, for all my offenses. Now I read that, among other things, there's the benediction. Did you listen carefully to that? Did any of you fall asleep? No? I hope not. Because if you listen carefully, then you get this benediction of attaining loving attachment to Lord Nityananda's feet. But I also read that because another part, concluding part of this discussion about offending Vaishnavas, blaspheming Vaishnavas, is what to do if you do it. Yeah. And what you do if you do it is you do like this. Something like this. Yeah. You have to humbly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually describes very nicely what you should do. It says, if by chance you happen to commit this offense, you should be repentant, recognizing your own low nature and having committed this offense. In the same way that a person who has been burned by fire seeks relief, one should nullify the offense by lamenting, resolving to come before the Vaishnav, fall at his feet, and satisfy him by offering obeisances, praises, and respect. If the Vaishnava is not satisfied, you should remain ready to comply with his every wish. Become his personal servant, actually. If the offense is so great that the Vaishnava's anger does not die, then in great remorse, thinking yourself most unfortunate and bound for hell because of your offense, you should give up everything else and take shelter of continuous Nam Sankirtan. By the great power of Nam Kirtan, certainly in time, you'll be delivered from your offense. But if you, reluctant to put yourself in a humble position by offering repeated respects and service to the Vaishnava that you have offended, if you justify yourself by arguing that simply taking shelter of the name is sufficient for the deliverance from this offense, then you become guilty of further offense. So you can see how Madai so nicely prayed to Lord Nityananda. So we have to be able to feel it like that. We have to become sensitive in our Krishna consciousness to these things. It's very, very important not to be callous and sort of, the don't care type of attitude. So it's very, very important, this mood of repentance and regret. And then if you happen to be offended, then of course a good attitude is that even if someone comes up to you and tells you something really horrible, that you are, a dot, 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 exclamation mark, star, further exclamation mark, and various other sort of expletive symbols. In other words, if they really tell it to you as they may think it is, then how should you respond? Well, if you think that you are the most fallen, or at least, fairly well situated in that group, then you might well consider that actually this person is criticizing me for being, a lousy devotee, and, you're not serious and all this, something like that. You could think that, well, this devotee is practically praising me. They don't even know how rotten I am. They're telling me I'm a lousy devotee, but I'm not a devotee, actually. So they have been too merciful to me. So Lord Nityananda's reply is very nice as a type of example. Of course, he's speaking in his own mood. He's the Supreme Lord. But it's also a very nice example for the type of mood one should have if one feels offended somehow, if it happens. Lord Nityananda smiled, hearing the loving prayers offered to him, and said, "Get up. Arise, O Madhai. You are my servitor. I now reside within your body. Is the father disturbed if his little child hits him? I've accepted your beating in this parental mood. What is more important is that anyone who hears your wonderful devotional prayers to me will certainly develop loving attachment to my lotus feet." So this is very nice. "You are the recipient of my Lord's mercy. Therefore you are free from all blame. Whoever worships my Lord Chaitanya becomes most dear to me, and I offer him my protection eternally. If anyone disregards Lord Chaitanya, but worships me and sings my glories, he will suffer pain birth after birth." Lord Nityananda then embraced Madai and took away all his misery. So, it's just a brief part of it, actually. There's a lot more to it. But just see how nice Lord Nityananda's mood is. He is not thinking, in that haughty, arrogant type of way that, how dare you offend such a person as me.
I have so many good qualities, and you said I'm a nonsense. What on earth are you? Not like that. Last thing I'll mention as far as blaspheming Vaishnavas is concerned is about the story of Bhrigu Muni. And mainly it's interesting, well, it's interesting in a number of ways. Mainly it's interesting, anyway, we'll tell you about that when we get there. He is a person who decided to do an experiment to do with offenses. He decided to commit offenses to test people and see how they reacted to being offended, to get more of an understanding of where those people were at. And the people he chose to offend were, first of all, Lord Brahma, then Lord Shiva, then Lord Vishnu. So he was really taking a chance. They're the wrong people to offend. Anyone's the wrong person, but they're really the wrong people. Because there was a debate about who is the most pure, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Lord Vishnu. So he said, I'll go and find out. So his plan was to offend them and see how they reacted. So first of all, he went and offended his father, Lord Brahma, the head of our Sampradaya, who happens to be his father. And he offended him in a certain way. It was a mental offense. We mentioned yesterday there's mental, verbal, vocal, mental, vocal, and bodily offenses. So he went to see his father, Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma came forward to greet him. And the traditional method when you meet your parents is you bow down. Do you bow down when you meet your parents in the morning? Do you? You don't. Oh. Neither did Bhrigu Muni. And you know what his father was going to do? His father was going to kill him for this disrespect. Yes. When Brahmananda, if you've heard of Brahmananda, one of the oldest devotees, first went home to see his mother after having become a devotee and shaved his head and all that sort of thing, he asked Prabhupada, what should I do? Prabhupada said, first thing is you bow down and touch your feet. So he did that. And she, being a New York Mataji, she didn't know what to make of that at all. She just became too astonished. But anyway, this is the traditional process, and Lord Brahma was going to kill him for not doing it. But his wife, Saraswati, said, no, he's your son, forgive him, it's just a mistake. So he forgave him. So then he went off to see his brother, Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva approached him very affectionately to embrace him out of brotherly affection, Bhrigu Muni jumped back, said, don't you touch me. Look at you, you're filthy. Look at me, you've got ashes of dead cremated bodies all over your body. It's filthy. And look, you've got that snake around your neck. Horrible creature. Ha, get away. Don't come near me and you associate with all these hobgoblins and people like that. Poof, you just stay away. So Lord Shiva was extremely offended, took up his trident to kill his brother, but Parvati intervened and said, he's your brother, you know, he got a little carried away, give him a chance. So he was saved. It's a very dangerous business, offending people like that. So, first of all, it was mental, with Lord Brahma. Now it was verbal. He expressed some certain offensive words to his brother, Shiva. So then he went on to Lord Vishnu. And you know what he did? He walked in, and there was Lord Vishnu reclining on an antashesh, and there was Lakshmi Devi massaging Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, and Lord Vishnu's lying there. So Bhrigu Muni just walked in and walked right up to him and kicked him in the chest. Kicked him. And naturally, Lord Vishnu, he just was shocked. He got up. And you know what he did? Did he call for his Sudarshan Chakra? Narayan Dwar, the ultimate cold weapon. Curse him. Call on Jayan Vijay. No. He said, oh, my dear Bhrigu Muni, my dear Brahman, sage, I'm so sorry to have gotten your way. I hope you didn't hurt your lotus foot on my soft chest, on my hard chest. I'm so sorry. But, actually, I consider myself so fortunate that you've done this. Your lotus foot has touched my chest. So now, all the goddesses of fortune now never leave me, because the dust from your feet is now on my chest. So I'm so fortunate. Thank you very much. That's a pretty wonderful type of response. But this is generally the mood. As devotees, we are very sensitive to avoid offending other devotees. But if apparently we become offended or something happens like that, it may look like that, then we should try and have this sort of attitude. Very important. Not that, yes, you offended me. In a sense, if you feel that, oh, you offended me, she, he offended me, and they did something bad, and, something should be done about it. These types of thoughts. What it indicates is that we have a rather inflated view of ourselves. We think that me, look at me, I'm important. Oh, I'm a very important person. And if someone offends me, then automatically they have done something very bad. Something wrong. It's wrong because I'm so good. And if you offend someone who's good, then that's wrong. And these people, they're wrong, so that means I'm very good. Isn't it? I'm so good. But that's not our idea. Our idea is Trinada Pisanichena, Torora Pisahishnina, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. That one should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. And in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And unless one is in that state of mind, one will not be able to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And one will get into Maya, sometimes at least. Yeah. One should be very humble, lower than the straw in the street. The straw in the street, you can't get any lower. People are walking on the straw in the street all the time. And what is the straw in the street doing? Is it getting up and saying, how dare you? No, it's simply taking that. And more tolerant than a tree, that people, the tree is standing there for a long time, it's hot, it's cold, it's wet, different times of the year. The tree is just standing there. And finally, in many cases, the people come along and cut the tree down. And while they're in the process of cutting the tree, they may pick some fruit from the tree to give themselves energy so they can cut the tree more nicely. And while they're cutting the tree, the tree will be giving them shade so they can cut the tree in comfort. So this is what it means, more tolerant than a tree. How tolerant is that? Yeah. And at the same time, not only that, always ready to offer all respects to others. Not just tolerant, putting up with a lot, but at the same time, ready to offer all respects to others. In this state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And in no other in no other state of mind can one chant the holy names constantly. So in our test, we want you to be able to give a couple of examples of real Maha Aparadis and a little realization, just like a one-sentence realization, about two. Is that okay? And that is basically what we want to discuss about the first offense. And I think we'll take a little break now, and we'll come back 10 or 15 minutes and talk about the next offense or couple of offenses. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I've heard about it, and I don't expect that any of you really have a problem with it, worshipping demigods. Anyway, we hope not. Sometimes people do. Sometimes, I mean, certainly in that transitional period for Hindu people, when they go from being Hindu people to being devotees, then this question will certainly arise. But we, as far as we understand, all of you are basically, firmly situated as devotees. So we don't, in other words, we don't really expect this offense to occur so much or to be as much of a danger as some of the others, like particularly offending Vaishnavas. That's really something very relevant and touchy. But here then, in our overview book, we have given some explanation. First of all, we've quoted from the Nectar of Devotion, which explains, we're just taken straight out actually of Nectar of Devotion. There are five qualities. Well, there are first of all 55 qualities which Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma have in common with Krishna and Lord Narayana, Krishna and his immediate expansions. 55. Then there's another five, as we have stated here, which Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and what to speak of any of the other demigods, they're the biggest demigods. So even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they don't have. They don't have inconceivable potency. They don't have uncountable universes coming from their bodies. They're not the original source of any incarnations. They don't give salvation. They can't give salvation. They don't even have it themselves necessarily. So they can't give salvation to enemies they kill. And they don't generally attract liberated souls. Generally they're not liberated themselves, or at least they're kind of working on being liberated. They're certainly not permanently liberated like Krishna. Now we've turned, are these lights on up here over you ladies? You seem to be more in darkness than you were. You're meant to be enlightening here. What's going on? I don't know what happened there, if we've turned out the lights off. Is it darker? It is darker. Strange. Anyway, I don't know. Our man was playing around with things there. Maybe he didn't learn anything. Okay, so Lord Narayan, he has these qualities. And all the other incarnations, expansions, and so on, Vaikuntha deities, they all have these extra five qualities, very practical things, inconceivable potency, universes coming from their bodies, at least they have that potential. They are the source of incarnations. They can give salvation, and they can attract liberated souls because they're permanently liberated. They're uncontaminatable. They cannot fall down, even if they want to. So, but then even beyond that, Krishna himself, Krishna specifically, has four more, which no one else has, although Lord Balaram does. So, he performs wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. Don't make a mistake about this childhood pastimes business. It means his Vrindavan pastimes. Yeah. It includes all the pastimes in Vrindavan. It's not just when he's a little baby with Mother Yashoda. Yeah. It's not just that. It's all his childhood, boyhood, and youthful pastimes before he goes to Mathura and becomes like a prince. So they're so wonderful, those pastimes are so amazing, that even the pastimes of other forms of the Lord cannot compare. Then he's surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of God. Of course, all the Narayan forms, they're also surrounded by devotees who have a degree of love of God which would make